to three now, so let's get going. Good morning and welcome to this latest Employment Law 101 webinar. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Peter. I'm a partner with Specialist Employment Law and Business Immigration Practice, MPM Legal. We're based in the south of England, but we work with businesses that are all over the world. They have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK. And that's, of course, where we come in and help them. Delighted, as ever, to be joined by my colleague, Adrienne. Morning, Adrienne.
Good morning.
Not as sunny as 2 weeks ago
No,
here.
I'm actually quite cold. It was
Yeah.
nice yesterday.
It was absolutely baking yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just a couple of housekeeping points before we get into today's session. We are recording it. Those of you who are regulars will know that you can get our video recordings on the MPM Legal website. You can also get the audio recording on Spotify and Amazon Music and Apple Podcasts as well. Just need to search for Employment Law 101. We've probably got, I don't know, 70 back episodes now, I think, something like that. So something for everyone. If you've got questions, and we absolutely welcome questions, please use the Q&A function down at the bottom. If you want to chat and just make some general comments that other participants can see this morning, I've opened up the chat function as well. I'm going to be popping a couple of links in there in a while. So today we are really pleased to be talking about menopause in the workplace. It's a topic that is getting a lot more attention, and that's reflected in some of the work that we've been involved in recent weeks and months as well. So thought it was ripe for talking to you about today. Interested to hear all of your experiences in terms of what's been happening in the workplace. As always, this isn't going to be a heavy legal lecture. We're not going to bore you with statute after statute. You'll be delighted to know. What we want to look at is just some of the practical impacts that we're seeing and some of the, tips for action that you can take away and think about implementing in your workplaces. Really, we want to make sure that you're going away and feeling confident in terms of how to deal with any menopause-related issues at work and obviously empowering the teams around you as well. So everything's filtering down. We know that menopause still can be a bit of a taboo in some workplaces. It's something that some people don't feel comfortable talking about or don't really know how to deal with. But here's the thing: when you look at the statistics and the data, the number of employment tribunal claims that are mentioning menopause doubled between 2020 and 2021. And we think that's just on an increasing trajectory. So it is something that is a lot more visible and people are willing to plead in terms of litigation. It's not just legal risk either. Obviously, as employment lawyers, that's the angle that we come at this from primarily, but it's also a culture issue too. And, frankly, if your workplace isn't set up to deal with and support people who are going through the menopause, you could be losing experienced, valuable people. When you look at the commercial risk, I know that there was a study done by CIPD. Obviously, those of you that are HR professionals will be familiar with CIPD, of course. They estimate that the cost of dealing with menopause-related absences and people leaving the workplace entirely because of menopause amounts to £1.5 billion a year, which is a staggering number. It's a massive number. So for a number of reasons, it really is worth getting all of this right.
Definitely. Let's just start with the basics, though. I mean, I know there's a wealth of information out there, but menopause technically is when someone hasn't had a period for 12 months, and it usually happens between the ages of 45 and 55. But perimenopause, which is also written about and talked about an awful lot on social media and other matters, is when the symptoms can start. And they begin a lot earlier. Some people go into it very, very early and can last for years. And the symptoms themselves can vary wildly. You know, for a lot of people, it's manageable, but for others, it's utterly debilitating. And we're talking about brain fog, fatigue, anxiety, sleep problems, mood swings, and then we've got the hot flushes that people are probably familiar with, and an awful lot more. And what I would say from speaking to a number of women, and you know, including myself in all of that, is sometimes at the time, women aren't necessarily aware of what's going on. You know, like they may be suffering from anxiety at a time when they never have done before, and they don't know why. And of course, that just exacerbates the anxiety even more. And you know, all of these symptoms, it's not just that they're an annoyance or that you know women aren't sleeping properly. They seriously impact confidence. There is an awful lot of commentary out there about women losing their confidence as a result of suffering from menopausal symptoms. As I said, maybe they don't know what they're going through, or that it's just happening and it's not something that they're able to control. Concentration is impacted, and obviously that is then going to have a knock-on impact to performance and sort of behaviors at work. Just also something really important to remember, and this is something that ACAS highlights, menopause doesn't just affect cis women. Trans men, non-binary people may also go through menopause, particularly if they've stopped hormone therapy or had surgery. And likewise, some trans women may experience menopause-like symptoms if their hormone treatment is interrupted. So it's not always going to be obvious in the workplace who might be affected. So, you know, steering clear of making assumptions as to which group of employees might be impacted is super important. And that's a, you know, another reason why creating an open, supportive culture is so vital.
Someone's made a good comment in the chat actually about it can be brought on by having operations as well.
Yeah.
I believe certain medication for cancer treatment, for example, can also trigger also. So yeah,
Yeah.
there are other things to think about there. That last point you made actually just reminds me to remind people that the last session we did was on the meaning of sex for the purposes of the Equality Act after that significant Supreme Court decision last month. So if you want to hear our thoughts on that Supreme Court decision, you'll be able to find that recording on our website and on Spotify and Amazon Music as well. Let's have a look at that legal framework then. Interestingly, menopause is not one of the nine protected characteristics. So there's no specific legal protection for menopause. And it's quite interesting as well because, I mean, you and I, Adrian, we've been going around doing these training sessions at various client sites on sexual harassment and the new duty to prevent it. And as part of that, we've been talking to a lot of employees and line managers about protected characteristics generally. And when we've gone around and kind of invited people, you know, what do you think about protected characteristics as a bit of a quiz almost, we have had a couple of people raise menopause as something they thought was protected, but currently it isn't, is it?
No.
But you
I thought it
know,
was quite good that they thought it was protected, because that would show that it's something that people are talking about, and it's a you know an issue that is definitely coming out more into the open. So I would probably take some confidence from that.
yeah, I think if we'd have, you know, done that training, say 10 years ago, then I don't think we'd have got the
We've
same.
got a different reaction.
Yeah,
Yeah,
different
I
reaction, I
agree.
think.
Yeah.
However, menopause can fall under protections of those existing nine protected characteristics that are identified in the Equality Act.
Which is probably why it's not protected on its own at the
Yeah,
moment, actually.
you know, it figures if there's a view taken that, well, there's perhaps sufficient protection under what's there, particularly with regards to age, sex, disability, and in some cases, gender reassignment as well. So just diving into that a little bit more, if someone's experiencing severe menopause symptoms to the point that it's having a long-term substantial impact on their day-to-day life, then those symptoms might amount to a disability in law. And those of you that are more familiar with the wording around the Equality Act, when it comes to defining in an employment law sense what disability means, then you can see how potentially menopause has the scope to satisfy the definition of a disability.
Yeah, I mean, there've been claims on that. I think, you know, on the sort of like the flip side of the coin, I think there has also been commentary about calling menopause a disability, and people saying it's not a disability, it's, you know, it's part of life, etc. So I think it's really important to understand that what we're talking about here is whether or not it meets that definition under the Equality Act. And but, you know, I think the point also to take away from what I've just said is, you know, you've got to be quite sensitive in terms of how you handle this in the workplace. So, you know, not calling it a disability, but at the same time recognizing that it might be something that triggers your duty to make reasonable adjustments,
Yeah,
for
because I mean
example.
that's the significance of this, isn't it?
Yeah,
If
exactly.
someone is found to have a disability, and it goes for any health condition that has that substantial long-term impact on day-to-day activities, you're then into the realms of triggering duty to make reasonable adjustments. So
Yeah.
considering what adjustments need to be made and then figuring out whether it's reasonable for you as an employer to do that. And of course, implementing where it's appropriate for you to do so. So that's how this falls under the ambit of disability discrimination, potentially. Aside from that, there's also sex discrimination to consider as well. So menopause is linked, of course, to biological sex. So if an employee is treated less favorably because of symptoms or because of sexist comments that are made, then you're squarely into the realms of that forming the basis of an employment tribunal claim, as we'll kind of see has happened. So disability discrimination, sex discrimination, age discrimination can crop up as well. You know, if somebody is perceived as being past it, for want of a better expression, or if they're overlooked for certain opportunities because they hit a certain age, if language around menopause is making certain ageist assumptions, then, you know, again, you're squarely into the realms of potential legal risk by way of an employment tribunal claim. What makes all of this stuff tricky, though, is that these issues often overlap. So, you know, we're talking about issues where age discrimination can potentially overlap with sex discrimination, can potentially overlap with disability discrimination, where you've got conduct and things arising out of menopause. And I think, Adrian, you're going to come on in a moment, just talk about some of the cases that we've seen go through the tribunal system that brings that to life a bit. But the takeaway point is that even if the law doesn't name menopause explicitly, it's not one of the nine protected characteristics, there's not a standalone law in respect of it, employers still carry legal risk if they fail to support staff properly. I mean, another example of that is in the realms of constructive dismissal liability or even express unfair dismissal liability. So, you know, we can see issues arising out of performance management processes, for example, where
Yeah.
menopause is introduced as an explanation for underperformance. And if you don't quite get the handling of that right, and the individual's got the service they need at the moment to bring an unfair dismissal claim, you've got to think about, well, are we still following a fair process? To what extent do we need to adjust and think about what we're doing? So, you know, there is real legal risk there. So far as discrimination risk is concerned, the legal exposure in terms of compensation is uncapped. And that's the big difference between discrimination claims and ordinary unfair dismissal claims. There's a cap on compensation in ordinary unfair dismissal. That cap's removed for successful discrimination claims. So the stakes can be that little bit higher, and that focuses the mind a little bit more.
Yeah.
What about some of those cases we've seen, Adrienne, in
Yeah,
recent?
let's just run through a cut. Let's just run through some, because I mean some of them are blindingly obvious, but I think it's good to run through them. There was one case, some of you may well have read about it. I think it was quite widely reported, McCabe and Salazar, where a 55-year-old woman was dismissed, and the CEO had made comments in a, and I think it was a heated exchange, shall we say. One example was that he would told her to calm down and not let her hormones get out of control. I mean, if there's one thing that would wind anybody up, I would suggest speaking to somebody like that would be it. But obviously, the reference to the hormones led the tribe tribunal to find that it was at least in part influenced by her age. The judge found that the CEO would not have made reference to her hormones to somebody who was younger, so she won her claim. And you know, I think that's blindingly obvious, really. But then in another one, in the case of A versus Bon Marché, which is the retail outlet, a male manager over a period of time continually made demeaning comments about the claimant, who was going through menopause, in front of not just colleagues, but also in front of customers. So one example would be that I think she was having to place an order using an iPad, and he called her a dinosaur in front of customers. I mean, that's I think. Peter's comment about constructive dismissal is important to just reflect on here as well, because not only is that discrimination, but also it's a shocking way to treat your employees and could quite easily undermine the implied term of mutual trust and confidence, giving the claimant a constructive dismissal case. So he it then in this particular case, they then went to a restructure and people were having to apply for their jobs. It turns out she was the only applicant for her job, but unbeknown to her at the particular time, came out later, he had gone around encouraging other people to apply for her job, making comments about her performance and her menopause. And obviously, the tribunal upheld her claims of harassment and discrimination on the grounds of her age. Now, I'd like to think that everybody on the call today is not going to tolerate that kind of behaviour in the workplace, but there we are. On the other hand, though, there are quite a lot of cases reported where claims fail, not necessarily because the employee wasn't affected by the menopause, but sometimes the link between the treatment and a protected characteristic just isn't clear enough, or the employer had a good paper trail to show that they'd made adjustments or they had fairly treated somebody. And this is in line with some of the stuff we've talked about on disability discrimination, where we talk about making reasonable adjustments, remembering that the whole purpose of making those adjustments is to level the playing field, to help them the employee being successful. So if you as the employer puts in place those adjustments, and and that's in context in connection with discussions with the employee about what can help them, maybe you've got Oc Health report to give you that guidance. As an employer, you're showing that you think you've done enough to help the employee be successful. And if they're not, then obviously management of performance can be done in the usual way. So just a couple of cases, just following on from that. One of them was this is about conduct. So the oh no, sorry. The first one I'm talking about isn't about conduct, actually. It's about the lack of a link. So Galvani and Walters, which was a pub, had the manager, which told the 53-year-old female claimant that she was fat and refused to give her evening bar shifts.
I remember this.
And the claimant was trying to ask the tribunal that they should infer that the references to her being fat was because she'd put on weight due to the menopause, and therefore it was discrimination and harassment on the grounds of her age. But the tribunal didn't infer it. They said there wasn't enough evidence to show that there was a sort of either conscious or subconscious decision related to her age. It was just basically just downright bloody rude, frankly. But the evidence didn't support those claims. And I think in that case as well, I think it was that the claimant hadn't made any noises about going through the menopause, so people weren't actually aware. So, there does still need to be these sort of the evidential link. As I
I think
said,
the tribunal also there. They said something like there was lots of evidence that there were also overweight male employees who were given shifts, and she wasn't able to bear out the difference in treatment because of that, issue in particular. But yeah, I remember sort of reading
Just a
through
horrible
it.
manager though, but there we are.
Well, horrible. Yeah, it sounded like a work environment.
Exactly. So that gives exposure to other claims, as we said, like constructive dismissal being spoken to like that. There are quite a number of other cases, which on the conduct point, and I think probably most of the time we are going to be talking about how menopause impacts on performance, but there are the interesting cases on conduct. So there have been claimants in cases in school environments, for example, where claimants have been dismissed for behaviour such as angry reactions, perhaps behaving in a physical manner, and they've claimed that the menopause has made them act that way. Now, with hormonal changes and mood swings, that may well be the case. So it's not always that you can say that menopause can't be used as an excuse for the conduct. But what tribunals are particularly looking for is if there has been a proper investigation. Some cases have been upheld because the employer has done a proper investigation into what the employee's claiming, and cases have fallen down where that hasn't happened. So it comes back round to our good old processes. Do you have the genuine belief? Is it backed up by a thorough investigation? So take it slowly, make sure that you are doing an investigation to be able to run your fair process. And in a couple of these cases, again, it comes back around to the knowledge point. The employer wasn't aware the employee was suffering with those symptoms. So at the time when they were disciplining them for conduct, they didn't have any idea. There was no knowledge within the business.
Yeah,
So
couldn't form part of
not
their
part of their
decision making.
thinking.
But
Yeah,
it's that old,
exactly.
I mean, sort of a couple of things strike me about that. And again, from any kind of harassment training, actually, it's just, I mean, not even be nice to people, but just kind of cultivate a working environment where people aren't being unkind and saying stupid stuff.
Yeah, just be
Because
decent.
just be decent. You're
Yeah.
just opening up the door for someone to say, well, you're only saying these things because of.
Yeah.
Insert protected
Yeah.
characteristic. And then the other thing about that whole decision-making process and record keeping, which you and I are obviously a massive fan of, write everything down.
Yeah.
Even if it's not a kind of typed formal minute, just write something down in a day book or on a log
Yeah.
somewhere or a bit of paper if you're a manager, keep a record of something. But having that paper trail and following that due process just helps you rebut any allegation that treatment is because of age or sex or disability. And I think
Yeah.
I anticipate in some of the cases that we've seen on this, the employers had real difficulty rebutting the argument that it's because of one of those things because they haven't got anything they can bring out themselves evidentially to show, which is credible, right? It's just going to be oral evidence, perhaps.
You can, but and then on the other hand, you can see from the employer's point of view that if you've got some kind of misconduct at work, you know, particularly if it's sort of it's an angry interaction, it could be in front of customers and stuff. You can see as an employer, you can go, we can't tolerate that behavior. We can't. So it's making sure that, yes, while that might be the first thought process, it's like, well, hang on, let's just take a step back and let's just dig a little bit into why and see, you know, see what we can do. And that's what forms part of the investigation. And there may be times that when, as we say, when you've done that investigation, you still come to the conclusion that, you know, adjustments may have been put in place, or that people have been spoken to about their conduct before and asked what can help, and yet they still did it. And in which case, then just taking that time to think about it and building up that picture as part of the investigation is going to be crucial. Because I think the one thing that I would add to the cases that were lost on the basis of failing to follow a process, in quite a lot of them, there was some evidence of what was gone on. There was a reduction in compensation on the basis that the employee contributed to their own downfall. So technically, you lose your claim for, say, unfair dismissal on the basis of process, but the tribunal can then reduce the compensation if it's found that any flaws in your process wouldn't have made or would have made a slight difference, etc., or the employee is somehow at fault because of their own behaviour.
Of course. Elaine's asked a good question, which I just want to shout out, which is, how can an employer know for sure that the symptoms or conditions that a female employee is suffering is due to the menopause? I just ask, as I was on a webinar about this issue, and it seemed that any symptom was put down to the menopause. I ask this as a woman, exclamation mark. I
Good
mean,
question. Good question.
do you want to start, Adrienne?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this is going to be us saying to you that we're encouraging an open and transparent culture where people can talk about these things. So I think, you know, you've got to be in a position where you have that culture, and against it, you would probably be asking open questions is, you know, do you want to talk to us about why you're feeling this way? Is there anything you want to share with us? What support can we give you? And hope that the employee will come forward. Do you turn around and say, are you menopausal? Probably not, because if the employee is reluctant to come forward, they might feel that that's very threatening. They might feel that that of itself is likely to just make them, you know, make people cross. So it's a question really of just being empathetic to their to what they're suffering from. And I think it also comes back to the point that Peter was talking about when we were talking about disability. If there is something that is impacting their ability to do their day-to-day jobs, the natural progression there is to ask them what can be done to support them so that they can be successful in their role. So, you know, it is really difficult. I mean, we get asked the same question in relation to mental health conditions that people put forward. How do we know for sure? Well, we could get doctor's evidence. Does that send the message that we're not trusting the employee, or do we focus on what support we put in place to, as I said, make them successful and then move it forward from there? What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's about that It's about having the awareness point initially, isn't it? So, unless you've got that knowledge, you can't act on it. And there's this idea of imputed knowledge where the employer ought to know that somebody has a disability, for example. But if there's no kind of reasonable sniff of that, I think it's incumbent on the individual to raise it and say, actually, this is a situation. If the employee raises it and you suspect that it's not really having an impact, it's open to go to occupational health, as you've said, to bottom that out. So
It is difficult. I think it is difficult. But I think it's about setting up your organisation where employees feel that it's okay to talk about it. I think it's
yeah,
probably going to make life
absolutely.
an awful lot easier.
Absolutely. We've had another question, which is about someone who's got menopause hallucinations, which are a symptom of menopause for that person, and they're declining occupational health support. What's our position if we choose to pursue medical capability? I think that's beyond us answering in this. I think you need some specific legal advice in terms of how to handle that, because it sounds like that's an employee who is not on board and cooperative in terms of medical intervention. So they are quite difficult to manage. So, I mean, obviously you can get in touch with us if you need some advice on that, but that is quite a tricky one to
Yeah,
address.
could we probably spend another hour asking you a bunch of questions in order to give advice? And as Peter normally says at the start of this, we can't do that on these webinars, unfortunately. So sorry if that's unhelpful.
Louise said, is this when Supreme Court ruling webinar? That was 2 weeks ago. So the recording, you'll be able to get the recording, Lucy, on Spotify and on the NPM legal website. So the recording of that webinar is available. The way that Zoom is configured when you sign up for these series, it only lets us keep one title for the webinar. So it carries through from week to week, and then we have to update it, which seems like a really clunky way of doing it. And I'm sorry that it is that way. But the subject matter does change from week to week. We just have to go in and manually change it. But the recordings for that are available. What about practical tips then in terms of what you need to be thinking about in practice? Well, just to keep things simple, we've got five for you to take away. The first is just talking about it in the workplace and normalizing conversations around menopause. And that could mean referring to it in health and well-being communications, or just giving line managers confidence to be able to ask employees that are either raising it to them or they suspect where it might be an issue, is there anything you need? And that could be HR intervention, it could be occupational health intervention, it could be bringing in some outside resource, but just more openness and normality around discussions, acknowledging that it can be an issue for some people in the workplace. The second, and we say this a lot about various employment law issues, but it's training managers. You don't need them to be legal experts, and you don't need them to be menopause experts, but understanding the basics that the law can apply, that there can be a degree of protection, that there might be some legal jeopardy if things go wrong, how to spot when someone might be struggling, and how to respond in a sympathetic and supportive way as well, even if that is just, if you're aware of an issue, let us in HR know, or let health and well-being know. But just something so a manager isn't sat on an issue, and then by the time it gets across your desk, it's blown up into something where there is real scope for legal jeopardy. Third is thinking about making adjustments. So we've talked about how menopause in some cases has been held to be a disability. We've talked about how that then triggers the duty to make reasonable adjustments. So have a think about what could be offered. In some circumstances, you might just want to go ahead and make those adjustments anyway. If they're easy for you to accommodate, don't feel you've got to wait for someone to satisfy a legal definition of disability to then apply the adjustments. So, can you offer flexible working? Is there somewhere cooler to work? There was that case about the temperature in the work environment. Can meeting times be adjusted? Can you have focus rooms where people can sit and concentrate without interruption? ACAS have got some very, very good practical tips on that. I'll put the link in the chat to their guidance in a moment. The fourth is consider just a simple policy on this. Now, it doesn't have to be long, doesn't have to be complicated. Just make it clear that your organization supports people who are going through menopause, and just set out what help is available. That's just a really good starting point.
And make sure your managers know about it. because then they've
Yeah,
got a point of
exactly.
reference.
Don't do the metaphorical. We've drafted it, put it in a drawer. It's never going to see the light of day ever again until somebody sues us, and then we've got to produce it as part of disclosure, and we get cross-examined on why no one's ever implemented or knows about it. So yeah, that's a really good tip, Adrienne. Finally, lead by example. If senior leaders treat this as an issue, then other people will follow. And if you don't know where to start, like I said, ACAS has got some really good guidance. There's a Quality and Human Rights Commission guidance as well. I feel like I talk about that organization in every single training session now, but
Very relevant
it
at
is
the moment.
relevant. I mean, those guys are busy. So I think some really good practical resources. I'll put the link in the chat in the moment. The British Standards Institute, randomly, have got a published workplace standard for menopause with advice and guidance as well. So there's loads of information that's out there, including stuff that the government are working on, Adrienne.
Yeah, because there's going to be quite a lot of movement, isn't there? And I'm sure you'll have all read about Mariella Frostrup being appointed as the menopause ambassador, and her that's sort of to head up talking about equality action plans, especially for larger employers. I think it's is it employers over 250 employees are going to be asked to put in place equality action plans. Well, I mean, we don't know the detail yet, and I've done a little bit of digging around to see what those equality action plans might look like and what they might include. But as you might expect, there's no magic science here, but it's things like mental health support, making sure that communication channels are open to encourage discussion. Training, adjustments to the workplace, which would include flexible working, all of that stuff. But there's also been discussion around Section 14 of the Equality Act, which could allow claims to be based on a combination of characteristics. So I can bring a claim for discrimination on the combined characteristics of sex and age rather than treating them as separately. And that's actually that would be quite a big shift. But the bigger picture across all of this move is cultural, as we've said again. Whether or not the law changes, the expectation is changing. We are in a world of a changing workplace. Employees do expect support, and businesses are having to wake up to the fact that maintaining talent and keeping experience within the workforce means supporting them through all life stages, menopause included.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've put those links into the chat. Hopefully they're useful. Hopefully this session has just helped demystify a look a few things. Just two final questions we've had kind of related. What kind of workplace policy or guidance considered best practice around menopause? Should it be standalone or part of other wellbeing policies? Entirely up to you. You're in control. Depends, I think, on the size of your organization, what resources you've got, how many employees you've got, really. You might want to fold it into a general set of wellbeing policies. Absolutely no reason why you can't have a standalone short form policy on it if that suits you. The other question is, what documentation should employers keep to demonstrate they're meeting their responsibilities around menopause support? Well, I think having the policy is actually a really good starting point because lots don't. And so if you can whip that out and say, we've got this, we've trained people on it, we've raised awareness of it, people know about it, that's going to be a big thumbs up. Secondly, if you can just train managers and increase their awareness on it, that's another thumbs up. That's going to put you miles ahead. Obviously, what you do in practice, it's not just paying lip service to this stuff. You've got to kind of live it and breathe it, like you have with any initiative and policy guidance as well. But you've got to have those basics in place first as a platform to
I
work
mean,
from.
yeah, I mean, the other thing is, I know that some bigger employers, and it does very much depend on the size of the employer, that but they might have like a menopause focus week, for example, where there might be presentations, there might be little videos that are posted, generally sort of shouting about it and encouraging, taking those steps to show that it is open within the organization to talk about it. So there's all kinds of things that can be done. But yeah, ultimately, when it comes to avoiding the need to get in touch with us, it's making sure that when you're dealing with employees at that point, that that's when you're putting into place a lot of this stuff and keeping notes of what you're doing.
Absolutely. So, gone slightly over. Apologies for that. Thanks so much, everybody, for joining us, for your comments and questions as well. As always, we welcome feedback. You can connect with us on LinkedIn if you're not connected already, just to get more updates from us and invites to other events. We're back in 2 weeks' time. Not sure. I can't remember what's on our agenda to talk about in 2 weeks' time, but it won't be menopause. So we'll update the invite. It'll be something different. But otherwise, enjoy the rest of your week, and we look forward to seeing you again soon. Thanks, everybody.